Hey, yo, we about to tear it up.
Yo. Break for break, break for break it down.
This right here is how we do it. Break it down.
It's the Breaking Atoms podcast. We break things down to the very last compound. My name is Sumit, a.k.a. the potty mouth of the South.
And my name is Chris Mitchell, a.k.a. the actual factual.
Man, we got legends. We got legends.
It's what we do.
Today, we're speaking to a legend of... We're speaking to a legend of the UK Isles. Is that British Isles, isn't it? It's the British Isles. Sorry, that geography and I failed in that.
It's Babylon, bruv. It's... No matter what you call it, it will always be Babylon.
So we've got a legend of Babylon is what you're saying to me.
No, I'm not saying say it like that. I'm just saying whether you call it the British Isles, Shores, the Shires, whatever you call it, just know that it's built on a modern day Babylon. This place is Babylon, bruv.
Wow. But no, we've got Kaiser Smirnoff, Mr. Say-So himself on the Breaking Atoms podcast. And thank you for setting this up. This is... this is something we had to do if we're going to start unlocking as you've coined chambers. It's very important that we speak to people who've left a huge impact on UK hip hop, and it's important for our listeners across the world to understand and to salute our legends as much as we salute the world's legends of hip hop. Right. So Kaiser, this is a really good interview because you'll hear a lot of history in this one. You'll hear a lot of names, a lot of crews, a lot of places, and that's kind of Googling time for a lot of people. You'll get to understand the breadth and depth of UK hip-hop from someone who was there, someone who made a huge impact.
Who was outside.
And I'm just... Sorry?
Someone who was outside.
Yeah. Someone who was outside. But man, this is a good episode, man. He's such a nice guy. Very humble.
Yeah, he's... Listen, man. It's a lesson. It's a lesson. Every time you're around him, he's like, you know, we'd be telling him like, look, man, you know you're a legend, innit? And he's just like, nah, man, just pass me my food, man. Warm to you lot. So, no, it's good. Wow. It's good to give people their flowers. I don't ever... I just think, you know, we can do more than just say, you know, appreciation tweet. We know these people. We can speak to these people and we can let them know how much we love them and appreciate them. Let's do it.
Definitely. I agree. And like I said, you'll hear a lot of history in this one. This is Kaiser, Breaking Atoms podcast. Check it out. It's a special episode of the Breaking Atoms podcast. Today we are joined by rap royalty. Someone that we are very familiar with here in these British Isles, but someone who... in the true artist way, has solidified himself with a legacy that we like to call over here as a legend. We're taking it down to Say-So Street. We're taking it to one of the finest that have ever come from the British Isles. We're talking to Kaiser Smirnoff, Mr. Say-So himself. Words from the King. Welcome to the Breaking Atoms podcast.
Salute, man. Salute, everybody. Salute to yourself, Summit. Salute to you, Chris. You know, thanks for having me up here, man. I respect you guys. And you're doing wonderful things with the podcast. As you know, I've been a supporter from day. You know what I mean? Chris can vouch for that. I've been supporting from one day. You know what I mean? So, yeah, thanks for having me up here. Thank you.
We appreciate it, man.
Now, we appreciate you, bro. And thank you for supporting from day one. And, you know, it's nice to have people like yourself who we thoroughly respect tap in and support us too. That doesn't go unnoticed. So we really, really appreciate you. So... let's just get stuck in. Let's take it back to the 80s and the 90s. West London, I'm West London too, born and raised. What was it like for you growing up in West London, the music scene in the local area? Talk us through your early interactions as a kid, then going into kind of rapping and then your parents.
Do you know what? I came to West London. I wasn't actually born in London. I was born in Northamptonshire, in a little town called Wellingborough. Please don't look it up. It's not, you know what I mean? It's inconsequential. No, I'm joking. Shit, I love Wellingborough and Northamptonshire. So I grew up there. Yeah, I had an accent, everything, you know, like, so as far as like my upbringing there, you know, it was, you know, your Shire town with your small insular Afro-Caribbean community, both sides of my family knew each other. The Henrys and the Hartons, you know, like they were very well known, notorious even. And it was just your usual up, you know, like out of London upbringing, like, and you just, whenever you get exposed to certain things, these things stick to your mind and your psyche and your soul like glue. So I experienced hip hop and certain aspects of hip hop very young from my older brothers and my cousins, you know, watching breaking, going to the cinema, watching breaking, actually doing dance moves, popping and locking, and believe it or not, there was a time when I could actually spin on my head. You know, so
I could never do that in my lifetime, not even once in my life.
It took years of practice, you know what I mean? And them times that I was skinny, a skinny little kid, so I could afford to do it, you know. But yeah, hip hop was with me early, and it stuck with me, and I was just enamored with it. I felt that I related to it instantly, you know what I mean? I came to London when I was about 11, 12 to Ladbroke Grove. It was a small kid, big city, you know what I mean? So I was very, you know what I mean, like shy, countrified. I had to speed up fast. I had to get up to the speed. And I started running with people who made sure that happened, you know. But I wasn't settled. I'll be honest, I wasn't settled. So I was constantly searching for something to help ground me as a teenager, as an early teenager. And the two things that did that were comics, superhero comics, and hip hop. You know, and I was always writing down my feelings and my thoughts from when I was young. I used to win poetry competitions when I was like in school, just for writing haikus and stuff like that, and you know, sonnets and stanzas and all these things, and you know, and then I'd heard my older brother start rapping and spitting. I was like, yo, that's sick, from all the Eazy-E tapes, KRS-One, BDP tapes, you know what I mean? Jungle Brothers, Native Tongues Tribe, and I emulated that. You know, and obviously growing up around West London, Ladbroke Grove, a lot of people, if you know your history, you know Ladbroke Grove is one of the actual hubs for UK hip hop. You know what I mean? You've got Subterranea, you got people like Cash Crew, you know what I mean? Like loads of different people, man, actually came from West London. So, you know, I was exposed to that early. You know, well-known history. I actually went to school with Harry Love. My good old mucker, Harry Love, shouts to Harry. He held me up on Instagram today, actually. But yeah, early, my exposure and my immersion in the culture was early. You know, throughout the 90s, 80s and 90s. And I think it was when I heard London Posse, Demon Boys, I was like, yo, them men sound like me. They talk like how my uncles talk. Like when my uncles are talking to my moms, and like, what is this? And I wanted more. And as soon as I heard Our Life in London, and you know what I mean? She had it rubbish, but she trust you with it. You know what I mean? Like, all I want to do is live like the other half do. Like, oh, come on. I was just, yeah. I was gone. Loved Bionic. I preferred Bionic to Rodney, to be fair. Bionic's voice was rugged. Like, you know, so yeah, that was my first kind of like intro fully to be pushed into the culture, you know. So, and it, yeah, just yeah. I just went away with it. So
as someone like myself, I know West London really well. I went to college in Ladbroke Grove, and it's got like a rich musical history, like you say, but it's not just hip hop.
Yeah.
Various genres. I mean, Dub Vendor, that's like a cultural institution. It's a landmark. Mm. What are some of the other genres of music you came up listening to outside of hip hop as a result of being in West London?
Yeah, well, again, you got your Dub Vendor. So obviously you had the Bashment and the Ragga and the Revival, you know, all the stuff that parents and grandparents used to listen to. You know, it West London obviously has got the other part, which is you're not in Hill, the upper crust. So I had friends that were quite affluent and had parents and families were wealthy. You know, we were listening to things like Alanis Morissette and Nirvana and, you know, Tricky and those sort of things, like early 90s. What I would call the inception, or part of the inception, to the whole EDM left field indie scene. You know what I mean? So we were listening to things like that. Again, house music. I think Sticky, the garage producer, was up the road as well. There were some studios at the top of Ladbroke Grove, just before the Red Bridge, Sainsbury's.
Yeah.
And I think Sticky had a studio there. I never went, but I know a couple of people used to go there. So, you know, there was things like that. Jungle. There was a pirate radio stations in Latimer Road, Transmission One. So I would tune into Transmission One and listen to Jungle early. You know what I mean? Maestro used to be a jungle. Mm-hmm. Yeah, used to be a jungle MC called BK. So I used to listen to his tapes when he was a jungle chat. It was crazy. So I just got a mixture of everything, man. Carnival Time, obviously. You got your Steel Pan. Your Steel Pan competition, you know, Soca. We were going to Soca raves in Tudor Rose, Zenith, in Park Royal.
Oh, yeah, wow.
Kakalele, Kokie.
Oh, like, wow. Yeah, oh, wow. Man. You're mentioning names.
Yeah.
Tudor Rose is round the corner from where I grew up.
In Southall, right? Yeah. I know the area as well.
Because Abhi Shantia and Jah Shaka used to do raves at Tudor Rose in the community centre, which was like down the road.
Yeah, Abba. I always remember the guy who used to go around, Abba, Shanti, Abba. She used to hand out the flyers. Right,
facts.
Man. So again, sponge. We, like, me and my compatriots were sponges, and we just absorbed all of it, you know. Because and I feel that was the good thing about growing up in West London, because I don't think that a lot of other boroughs at that time had that vibe. You know, you could go literally from the top of Ladbroke Grove, it was Holland Park. You got people like Robbie Williams and all the MPs and stuff living at Holland Park, and then up down to St. Charles, up to the hood. You got Mozart Estate, Warnington Road, where us lot used to call Criminal Corner. And you know what I mean? Like, it was just hood, you know? So it was a the juxtaposition was crazy, but it coexisted. It was natural, not forced, you know. So, and we, like I said, we just took it all in, you know.
Yeah, it's bringing me back to the 90s. No, not the 90s, but 90s, my grandma used to shop down Ladbroke Grove, but 2000s, I was around St. Charles.
Yeah.
Because I went to St. Charles. Your name rang bells in St. Charles, you know. Like, we have a mutual friend. You remember Chris Castro?
Of course, Castro, man.
Yeah, he was your one-man street team back then. Like, he would come into the college, he'd be like, yo, my brethren, Kaiser, and I ain't going to lie in it, because I have a hater gene. I didn't know you at the time. So I'm like, who's this Kaiser? Who is he? And then I got familiar later on. I said, oh, okay. All right, move carefully. Talk about your early group with Michael Parkinson, though. I'd love to know more. We spoke to him and he mentioned the name and Marcus Explains, but what are some of your memories from your collaborations?
Yeah, do you know what this is? This is, I know we're on Wi-Fi because I was literally just thinking, I've got to mention NWC, Parky, Ram, Kaisers, you know, Amos. I think this was about 98, after I won the Tim Westwood open mic competition in the Temple, of all places, North London. Like, if you went there, you know that was the crowd, innit? That was like live at the Apollo. If you weren't making it, it was, please pass the mic. Please pass the mic. No mercy. So I won the open mic competition. I was getting props and whatnot. And he did a showcase at Dingwalls. Now, everybody was there. Your Skinny Man, Berry Crew, Intens, and all them man there from Highbury and that, you know, Chester and Farmer, when they was all rolling together and that. The Hackney lot, 12 Stone, you know what I mean? Kabayashi, Lanson, Culture T, you know what I mean? Like, everybody was there. Bronze and Black, 57th Dynasty, everybody was there. So I went up there, and Parky introduced me to Ram. It was Akron, Robert Alamini. And he was like, yeah, okay, cool. We see the spit. Come to the studio in Acton. I don't know if you went there, Chris, the Acton Studios.
It's the one that Mauro ran.
That's the one.
Yeah, he mixed my first album.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. Come on, man.
Yeah, Mauro. Good old Mauro, man. For one day. So, yeah, and then they built this track. I think it was either with like a James Bond, like an old soundtrack sample, and they played it, and it was called Call Blimey. And there was about seven of us on there. And they were like, you got to come on there and just say about, like, just diss these whack MCs. And I was just like, all right, okay, I'll try it. And I wrote my bar. I heard Ram's verse. I heard Parky's verse and Ram's verse and Amos's verse. And I didn't want to rap again. I didn't want to rap. I'm not ready. I'm not ready. So I wrote the bar and I went in the booth and I spat it all timid and meek. MCs get me mad because they start talking rubbish. And they was like, no. You got to hype it up. And I was like, okay, cool. MCs get me mad when they start chatting rubbish. Well, and then they just brought the fire out of me on the track called Blimey. And they was like, yeah, okay, you got potential. Let's do some more. And then P just brought me in with more tracks. And then the leveling up track for me with NWC was a track called Hung, Drawn and Quartered. And it was myself, Parky and Ram. And I did a Capadonna, basically. I had like
100 bars?
Yeah, I did about a 70-bar verse.
Did you put your phone number in there, like Winter Wars?
No, not even. I said some madness, like, I'll pull maneuvers on your troopers with the shooters and leave your crew stuck in some beds up in a booper. And then I was like, what?
Like, yeah, mad.
And this is what leads me into the next phase now, because Damlot was just like, guys, like, what was that? What did you do? Like, Parky, even to this day, Parky tells me, do you know what? I'm drawn a quartered, man. Like, that's you. And I was like, do you know what? You're my sensei, man. Us. You brought me into the game. And I, you know, Michael Parky, shouts to Michael Parky. You know, he's one of the senseis that brought me and guided me and, you know, held me up into the game. So, yeah, I owe him a lot.
Yeah. Respect to Michael Parkinson every time. One of my big brothers in the game.
Mm. No doubt, man.
Definitely. So you became very integral going from NWC. You became very integral in an integral part of Terra Firma, shaping UK hip hop. It was a massive moment for a lot of us who were listening from the outside. But how did that whole experience shape you as a person?
Well, it's just hearing you say that something that I contributed to shaped UK hip hop, man. I don't feel like I'm just hearing it back and just taking in the magnitude of, I'm guessing, what my contribution has done. You know, I'm so humbled by it, but at the same time, you know, I'm like, wow, this is crazy. It's shaped me to be a master of any craft. I put my mind and my integrity and my hard work into. You know, there's the word skills always stood out for me, because skills was more than just perfecting penmanship. It was perfecting breath control, mic control, you know, to a later stage, business as well, how to conduct yourself in a business manner with people, you know. So Terra Firma taught me a lot of things on how to, you know, maneuver in the UK hip hop world. You know, it taught me how to build bridges and relationships with people, and just how to just master being the best that you can be as an artist. You know, so, and me, like, when we did Terra Firma, what, 2000 and 2000 and 21.
Yeah, early 2000s.
Yeah, like mad early. And I was just a kid just wanting to have fun and just rhyme and just destroy any track and any person who's on the track with me in a nice way. But, you know, it taught me, you know, again, competitiveness with your comrades. Steel sharpens steel, you know. We always had that thing. Terry Farmer came up with the phrase, I'm my brother's keeper, because we always had, you know, the interest and the instinct to raise each other up and to sharpen each other's skills, no matter what our endeavours were and what we're going to as a crew. Because you can't have two men spitting wicked and one man spitting a bit that weren't going to make it. So it was like, yeah, that part, when you come in, you have to be fire. You have to be gold. You know what I mean? The settings have to be correct. So it just taught me how to just function as a unit with a crew and just, you know, just navigate not only the streets, but just day-to-day of life, really. We were a family. We were a family, you know, to be quite fair, in my perspective. And, you know, going back to about, you know, shaping UK hip-hop, that's always what our plan was. We wanted to, because there was a divide, and let's be honest, there still is in UK hip-hop, you know, but we had both sides of that divide. We brought everyone together, because not only were we spitting about the street stuff and the road stuff, what was going on at the time, but we were spitting knowledge to go with it as well. So it's kind of like your Canes, your G-Raps, your Wu-Tang, you know what I mean? So we were killing them with stuff you could talk about in the barber and stuff that you can talk about at Stonehenge when you're writing a dissertation or an essay for uni. So we got all the both sides of people who were taking in the artistry of lyricism and rapping. And we loved it, man. We loved giving back and performing to people. Yeah, just mad flashbacks. I've got so many flashbacks.
No, I can imagine, like, for us listening, it was the passion, and it was just something new and vibrant for us. And, you know, I was in my mid-teens at that point. I was, you know, 14, 15 when you guys were coming out. Younger, probably at 13.
You was young, 13, bro.
14, right, so even younger. So to...
Yeah, you were young, man. You have to mind how you talk to me, you know. I'm your OG, bro. You. Yeah, you have to mind how you talk to me still.
Yo, you lot are making me feel old.
I would say Kaiser's an OG. You are just, you're like me, Chris. We're failed Homo sapiens. We're in this together.
No,
you know,
no,
what I'm
speak
saying?
For yourself, bro. Speak for yourself, man.
No, but it was the passion. You're right. I think the G-Rap comparisons is a very apt one. Because G-Rap could speak about what was happening in the streets, but also at the same time talk about working a job and do it in the same breath. So I think the G-Rap comparisons is important. But yeah, you guys are, it set the bedrock for what was to come or what should have come. That was the foundation. Terraform was the foundation. It was a catapulting moment where you could go even, people could come behind you and go higher, but It raised the bar.
Thank you.
What I'm saying, it raised the bar of what
and
what,
the bar remains.
And sometimes when you have crews like that, and it's reminiscent from all parts of the world, where West Coast, East Coast, Midwest, South, UK, you have to have a group of MCs or an MC who set the standard, and people can come either behind it to continue it on, or we get the crabs in the bucket, or, you know, whatever happens after that. But it can go either way. But it's a wonderful contribution to have in UK.
Thank you, man.
Personally, I think.
Yeah, I most definitely am proud. And following on from that, I think what we also had from a lot of our peers as well was the respect level. The respect level was astronomical because of the way how we were with people and the way how we carried ourselves as well. It wasn't a braggadocio thing of, you know, like, or a standoffish thing. It was just like, we're here, we're artists, we take our craft very seriously. We've come from a place where a lot of you people ain't been and don't want to go, but we can show you, but we also come with our heart on our sleeve and our cap in our hand. You know what I mean? Like, cap to our chest, you know, just down to earth, humble soldiers, you know, like, and the respect that we got from across the board from people, from roadman, like I'm talking ex-cons, like, you know what I mean, roadmen to people who are running companies, like, you know, people who are running companies like Spine TV. Do you remember Spine TV? Yeah, my Crooked Tongues, you know what I mean, and all yeah. that kind of stuff. Yeah, man, mm-hmm. Dark and Cold. You know what I mean? Like we were deal real regulars, yeah, man. Come yeah. on, it's from the inception. You know, like we had everybody rooting for us, not because it was a gimmick or is it intimidation? Because I just think we were just real, and everyone wanted to see us win. And we did. We came with the yeah. business, man. You know, so
yeah.
Ron Seal win it does what it says on the tin. You know,
love it.
Before I hand over to Sumi, though, I just want to put this on record: why Terra Firma impacted me so much, because. UK hip hop was a weird thing for me, just because I didn't feel like I fit in. I was a bit weird, a bit awkward. But the way you guys brought the British culture and the West Indian culture and brought my two worlds together, like I saw myself and I heard my grandparents and, you know, like Saturday at the house playing dominoes, Mackesons, you brought that culture to hip hop. And that's why it made me think, okay, well, look, I can be both. You know, I ain't got to pick and choose. This is us. So I really appreciate Terra Firma for doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, nice one, man.
Summit's looking at me all crazy, like he ain't got a clue. He ain't got a clue what Mackeson style
is. I'm just looking at you and going, here's another example of your hateration gene that you continue to have. Do you know what I mean? Just hate the game. Don't hate the players. You know what I'm saying? Hate the game. But so we will talk more about your pen level and elite pen level that you have, but you also transitioned into production. Talk to us about, and you talked about earlier about learning different parts of, you know, learning different skills. At what point did you decide to go into production, and what was the tipping point to go, now I need to go into this realm? Was it more to challenge yourself?
I'd say the production thing has always been with me. It was kind of like second fiddle to the rhyming, because I actually started producing at about 19. So you're looking when I professionally turned to MC, about 17, 18. After that, I actually started making beats on Cubase, all the kind of things. So I was doing that. Also, during my career, my stint as a Terra Firma member, I was around all the people, like your Harry Loves, your Lewis Parkers, your El Dolos, going all the way up to the new school, like your Louis Whites, your Smashers, your Jammers, you know, like loads of different people. So I was in the studio with people just absorbing different techniques unknowingly. It was just all going in, like, you know, how to lace drums. I was around the MPC, any MPC, any Akai, any SP12, SP1200s. You know, we were around DJs. We were around people like MK, Shorty, DJ Scully, everybody, Scratch Perverts. You know what I mean? We're around, you know, DJ Swing, everybody. We're around all these people, you know? So all the technical aspect was seeping into me. And I would watch them do things. Like I would watch people arrange the drum tracks and stuff on the SP, filter the samples through the S950 and the MPC 2000, 2000 XL. And I would just look and it would just go like a post-it on a fridge with a magnet. And I unknowingly, I actually started producing from them. So interesting story. With me, it was myself, Harry Love and Kalashnikov. We probably stayed up till about 6:30 in the morning, all putting ideas, basically just producing Paradise, Murder and Paradise, the single, contributing ideas and putting into it. It was crazy. I remember Harry came up with the sample. Me and Kalash was like, oh, do you know what? Yeah, actually put this in there and put that in there. Put the, yeah. And the, you know what I mean? The singing. And then we spoke about it. And then that's when Harry came up with the Stepping Razor sample with the Peter Tosh. And then it was almost like the opposite of too many chefs in the kitchen. It was just the right amount, what I call three bears porridge. It was just the right amount. We all had the input, and then Harry was like, do you know what? When we heard the mixed and mastered version, we basically had a mini street party in Shoreditch. my DJ at the time, DJ Karamak, shout out to Karamak, was DJing for us. We just finished the show in one of the clubs. I can't remember which show it was. It was a club on the corner, right on the corner, just as you go towards the bridge. And then you take a left and you're on Dalston Road. I can't remember the club's name, but we had a club and there was a gang of men, Terra Firma men, about 15 of us. We opened the car doors and played Murder and Paradise. And they played my bit when it comes in. They come from Murder up, and then they played the whole song. We just had basically a street party, just jumping around. Everyone, people were bibbing going past, what is this? And we were like, we made it. We made this, you know, like we from start to finish. And I think just to come back to your point, sorry, because I've got a tendency to go off on tangents, because there's obviously the age old argument about a beat maker and a producer. I think I learned what a producer is very, very early on. You know, for me, a producer is someone who is active at every stage. It's basically mirroring what Young Guru says from the beginning stage of the record to the end finished product. I mean, bar the mastering, we were basically involved in the mixing and the tweaking and the input, even to down to certain drum sounds, you know. And we were in the studio with the beat makers and bouncing off each other's ideas. Now that's my idea of a producer. A producer is the ear. Someone will say, "Do you know what? Put this in there." It's about the input to then get the output with the whole finished product. You know, and I think I learned that early. And I think what, do you want to know what made me actually become a beat maker? Also, shout out to Joe Ross, Snowy Bear. Shout out to my younger twin bro, TE1, for putting me on to production.
All the time.
Those two guys actually put the beat making programs on my first stolen laptop to actually make beats, Logic and Reason. From there, I just went. Wow. And the sole reason at the top is why I chose to make beats is because, Chris, you're a rapper. You know how long it takes for rappers to do stuff over people's beats.
I'm guilty of that. Like, I'm 8 months behind, but go ahead.
Right. I'd literally be waiting years for producers to give me their beats. I've had projects scrapped because producers... we've fallen out with them or whatever, you know what I mean? Or they've taken exception to something and they've taken their ball and left the playground and stuff. So I said, you know what? I can do this. I can make beats. I know how to flip a sample. I know how to filter hi-hats and beats and bass. Why can't I do it? After that, I've produced every single project that I've done since about 2013. Just because I wanted to.
Let that be a lesson to everyone out there. Shit. Just go and do it.
It is really as simple as that. It really is. Literally as simple as that. I did it just because I wanted to.
I'm playing with the idea of producing myself, but I just know what my personality is like, and I'll just become addicted. And I've got a wife at home. Like, she just won't see me.
I do know how it goes. Very, very well.
Yeah, you know how it goes. But you remember when we was in the studio and I came with that bag of samples? And I remember you looking at me like, these are your samples? And I was like, yeah. And you're like, you're a producer. You the finger, and I'm like, all right, cool. Yes. So producer Kaiser, how do you make that transition into, one, getting people to take you seriously as a producer because they know you as the killer MC and, you know, your whole process in terms of getting your name out there, selling beats? What was that like?
Harder than I thought it would be, to be honest. You know, I see it as a bit of a, maybe a bit controversial me saying it's a bit of a guru situation. Now, obviously we know Guru for his raps and his rhymes, but obviously Jazzmatazz, the whole Jazzmatazz series, and that is classics. But if I were to choose, I'd choose a Primo beat than a Guru beat, to be honest. That's just me. But there you go.
Yeah, I'm the same.
So with that in mind, bearing in mind, you know, you have to be like, again, take Dilla, Havoc, Pete Rock. You have to be fire, a certain caliber. Yeah, caliber for people to take you seriously as an MC and as a producer as well, a beat maker and producer. So I applied the same formula to the beat making. I'd them 10,000 hours. What would Harry do? What would Dilla do? What would Pete Rock do? What would Dre do? What would K Trinada do? New school producers, what would Mr. Carmack do? Even still now to this day, you know, like that's what I applied it to. And I've said, you know what? It's the exact same philosophy. You can't give people lust nothing less than neck break, head nod, Klingon face when you're making beats. You know, and I started off obviously not good. And then just keep honing my craft and playing it to people such as yourself. T1, you play it to your senseis, you get your senseis' approval, and they either give you the us, the nod, or they give you the note back in the lab. And it just goes from there. You know, and I just think, you know, you kind of know when you've leveled up. You just know when you've gone, it's gone ping, level up. You just know. Because when you play your beat to one of your people then, and they're like, ooh, that's banging. Is that free? Yes. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Or one of your senseis, this actually happened, goes, oh, and then takes the same sample and then tries to flip it and then comes back to you and says, you know what? I can't beat your version. Yes. So, yes, on all
steel,
days,
sharp and steel, isn't it?
The barbarian sword, bro. Like, and again, that's that's when you know to yourself that you've made it. That's for me personally. You know, when your T1s, your Harry Loves, you know, your people want to take your beats and like, yeah, I want that one. You just know that's when you get it, you know?
Speaking of unlocking levels, how do you unlock different flows, and what's the process for you? Because the one thing I admire about you, and I'm starting to understand why now I'm talking to you, and I hear that you're a sponge for things, you're a student, you watch things and you take things, and you love music, not just hip hop, but you love music. So I can see. But for me, as someone who's a failed Homo sapien, how do you choose to unlock different flows for different songs? What's the process that goes through your mind that goes, I'm going to attack it this way? Because you have, man, you have so many different...
a myriad of flows.
It's and like, sometimes you'll levitate, like Talib Kweli, and then the next time you do it in a different... Like, I'm trying to fathom how you do it. And I am not on that God level. So I needed to ask the God himself.
Thank you.
What's the process for that?
I'll try and simplify it, and I'll try and make it tangible as well, man. I don't want to make it too airy fairy or whatnot. I mean, it's just, again, just going back to the ethos, them 10,000 hours, man, them 10,000 hours, they count. They really do count. It's a Daniel in the Miyagi dojo, you know, montage. You know, and also I have this thing, I've spoken to Chris about this before as well, where, you know, as soon as you hear a track or something you're going to write for and it speaks to you, the music speaks to you. Me personally, I go into a mode that's called blackout mode, where it's almost like the deepest level of meditation you can get. And all of Terra Firma, we used to practice this. It's, we just hear something and everything would just go click. And it's like, literally everything would go black and you would just get lost in the music and the words. It's literally, you just get immersed in the feeling, the direction. The direction doesn't, it becomes no direction. It's just anywhere and everywhere. Case in point, I got another example. I got so many. I did some work for Young Gun Essa. Shout out to Young Gun Essa the other day. He gave me a beat, and it was an old Tom Jones sample, and it was just you know, some trumpets and stuff. And I heard he gave me his verse, and obviously Essa again, GLPG all day, God level pen game all day. And I said, wow, yeah, man, like, this is crazy. And what I did, I just literally just closed my eyes just went to work. Before I knew it, I had three verses. I wrote three different verses for him, and I went to his house and I laid the three verses, and he said, bro, you're going to have to give me a breakdown of what you just wrote. He said, you're going to have to give me a breakdown. I said, okay. But it's just, again, I said the same thing to him. I said, I took what you did as inspiration and listened to it. And then again, I just went into that blackout mode, bro. Like, it's not a case where I think, yeah, I'm going to write like this and write like that, because I think that's too, even that, I think it's too rigid. It's too rigid. Like, and again, as you know, if you lot have noted my flow, I hope everyone thinks that my flow is like water. It's like air. There's no constraints. There's no constructs to it. It's anywhere and everywhere, yo. Like, Chris, even when I listen back to when the Sky High bar, and I'm just...
I got a story about that I'm going to share.
You know, again, I just heard it. I heard everything. And I got a story. Again, that's my beat. And I said, yo, blackout mode. What was it? I know.
I was there.
That's another thing.
You wrote
thing
it on
that
the spot.
Do. Yeah, yeah. And I still do.
Mad.
Someone will play me something in the studio. I won't write anything. I'll go to the stew and write it there and then. Test myself like I'm in a fight. Yeah. Like just I see it again as myself versus a million ninjas. And I just close my eyes and just focus my energy. And then voila, it's there.
So I can attest to the God level pen game, right? So I've got two stories. So Kaiser sends me a beat and he's like, this is the intro for your album, right? So producer head, he's like, this is your intro. I hear it. I'm like, yeah, this is the intro. So me being the fool I am, I reach out to Sky Zoo, innit? And I say, you know, mutual friends, I want to do a song with you. Song gets done, right? Send the verse to Kaiser. Guess what Kaiser decides to do? I want to jump on this song as well, right? So not only do I have the headache of dealing with Sky Zoo, I've now got to deal with Kaiser, right? So I did something similar to him, but I didn't know what it was at the time. I went into blackout mode. Like, I lit candles. I was bow-legged, levitating in my living room, because I said to myself, I said, listen, I don't have to be the best on the track, you know? I just can't get washed. You know what I mean? Like, I can't pay for a verse and then get washed. Do you know what I mean? So I think I held my own and I went in the booth and I did it. And TE1 came into the booth and he said, every time you come to my studio, I want you to rap like that. Because that let me know. Because TE1 don't really give compliments like that. And he let me know. And Kaiser wrote his verse on the spot. And I tell you why. Because him and Roxy was in the studio and they were talking about all fishes. Some nature, wildlife thing. And he put it in the verse.
Kaiser, you're different. You're like...
A long list of hits is about as long as an oarfish. And I said to myself, hold on, but we just spoke about that. So that's how I knew we were on the spot. Another story, he gave me a double time beat, right? So I wrote my song. I felt good. Sent it to him. Sent the demo. Got the message back. It's all right. It's cool. I mean, it's all right. It's all right. I can't have the flow sensei, the flow father, telling me it's all right. So I took like 2 months off. And I came back. I sent him another demo and I still haven't recorded it, but it's done. And then he replied, God level pen game. Yes.
Facts.
Yeah, man. When he said it's cool, I said, nah. Can't have that. Can't have that. Nah, it's not allowed. But no, I appreciate you pushing my pen.
Yeah,
like that.
Man. It's
really appreciate it.
You know, it's one of them things I actually want people to get better than me. And I remember I told you this and I've told a lot of people, like, we're friends, but as soon as we jump on a track together, my main aim, I don't know what it is, is fight or flight. I get this urge to just annihilate everything. I just have to. It's not I'm throwing shade, or like, it's just, again, the blackout mode. There is no room for anything apart from myself. Yeah,
this ain't coffee table rap. It's heads
about
off me.
Legacy, right?
Yeah.
This is all also about what you're leaving. Like, you're leaving it all on the field, like any sports athlete, sports man or woman, is you're leaving it on the field. So in some ways, I understand that, because you're trying to go, this is going to live on longer than we will, right? So let's do the best we can each time. Yeah, man. Chris, man, what are you doing trying to compete with Kaiser on flow, bro? Don't do that, bro.
No, listen, bro. I will share another story. I was in college, 2004. I wrote on a list of paper the people who I want to work with. Chemo was on that list. I got to work with Chemo. Kaiser was on that list as well. So I'll be honest with you, man. Imposter syndrome kicked in because I'm like, yo, I'm in the studio with Kaiser. I got a song with Sky Zoo. I'm like, this is headache, bruv. This is stress. This is stress. But the when I look back and I listen to the songs, this album we're working on is my best project. Some of my best verses are on this project. So to me, that's a win. And you know, Kaiser actually told me this. He was like, don't be like me. Don't be like anyone else. Be the best version of you. And my best verses are on this project. So that's a win to me, and I'm really proud of it. Even though
I'm proud of it. I'll be real. I reckon you washed me on Recess straight up. No,
don't do that. Let me go get Roxy. Let me go get Roxy. Hear that. No, I'm joking.
You took it, bruv. You took it. Well played. I'll give props, you know. Even back to my second grand unveiling with the trilogy remix with Jest and Chester P. Like, again, I was just like, yo, like, again, I think that was the first instance of the blackout mode. Because I remember people were like, who's that? Who's that? That's people say, who's that? Who's this guy? Who's that? With Chester P. Like, people told me, they were like, yo, like, I rewound your verse. Like, I love Chester's verse and just, but like, I love your verse. And I was just like, what did I do? Kung Fu, when we used to go to Kung Fu. Deal real, right. with them man, like, again, senseis of the pen. Chester P, sensei freestyler, sensei get God level pen game, just as well. And I remember when I came on and did my verse and the crowd just went mad. I was just like, oh, wow. Because it's always been my, Chris knows this, my Superman complex, my alter ego. Like, yeah, you know, it's almost like I snap in and out of being Kaiser and just me, Adam. It's crazy. But yeah, I hear what you're saying, bro, about legacy. And I think unwittingly, I put my voice on there to leave a lasting impression and a legacy on the track. You know, so
is that what inspires you now? Still, that whole idea of legacy, or is it other things? Is it challenge? What still inspires you?
Do you know? I see myself. I'll be real. Like, this is me being myself. I'm not fishing for compliments. I'm past my prime. I'm past my prime. That's just me being humble. No, keep it 100. I don't feel like I could compete with Kaiser 10 years ago, 5-10 years ago. You know, like, to be honest, because I'll tell you why, because of the passion and because of my level of being content where of my status as an MC and as an artist. So I have the recognition and the props and the fire verses to back up what I can do in it. So I said, you know what? I'm nice. I don't have anything left to prove, basically. So that's why I'm still on my other journey, i.e. production. I still got a gang load of stuff to prove with that to myself and to others. So I'm getting in my 4,300 hours at the moment. When I've reached that level, then yeah. So, you know what I mean? I only rhyme nowadays, as you know. I'm like a Pokemon, a legendary Pokemon. I only come out, just stick my head out just because I like it, man. That's it. Because I can do it and because I like it. I love the art. I love rhyming. Love putting words together. Love flowing. You know? Yeah. It's the mistress that won't be left alone.
Traditional MC talk, even when you're just talking, you're just metaphors and similes and double entendres, triple entendres. It's all crazy. But before we wrap up, though, this is going to be my last question. We've touched on the production. Give us a quick breakdown about the Out the Box series, inspirations behind it, and what we can expect from you next as a producer.
Last year, just before coronavirus hit, sorry, in the first instances of when coronavirus hit, I got sick. I got very sick, and I had to go into hospital for a couple of weeks. I was just working on some beats and stuff at that time. Because before that, I'd put out an EP called French Doors under my pseudonym, my production pseudonym, Axe Kick. All mixed and mastered and produced by myself also. So I said, okay, cool, let's keep it moving. So I got sick, came out of hospital, and I just had about 4 beats there, just lying around, 4 or 5 beats. And again, it just hit me. I said, you know what, man? This is the second time I got sick. I was like, you know what? Can't wait around for nothing, innit? So every single day I made a beat. I made 2 beats. I made 3 beats. I was making, my pinnacle, I was making about 5 beats a day. I was making 5 beats a day. So I said, you know what? You got to do something with them. So I said, let me just do something that's just straight, raw, a bit like Dilla Rough Draft, inspired by us. So I said, but just not me rapping, but just instrumentals of my range, of my taste. So Out the Box came to be. So I did Out the Box, and I said, yo, I got 1 or 2 beats that are still left over. Started making a gang more Out the Box too. So those 2 beat tapes came out in the space of, 3 months of each other? Yeah, I did 2 beat tapes from start to finish, all mixed, mastered, everything by myself in 2 months. Again, just because I wanted to. I'm currently in the midst of doing Out the Box Volume 3, which is going to be the third and final one. Chris, I think your favourite is number 2. So I am cooking up Flames and Acid and Brimstone to destroy number 2.
I appreciate that. Starfruit, bro. Me,
yeah.
Bro, I'm not Hoover to that beat, bro. Yeah, bruv. Come on, man. This is grown hip-hop life, man. True. We ain't outside like we used to be.
I've got Out the Box series, just 3 beat tapes of me just trying and doing a thing, showcasing my range. I've got some more projects that are coming up. From personal projects, I've got at least 4 EPs, 4 beat tape EPs which may have rapping on them, may do. I've also got a fully produced EP that needs to be mixed and mastered for a singer called Faye Simon, which she's a beautiful soul personality, and I feel honoured to have made this music for her. So that will be mixed and mastered soon. And coming out also. My job as a producer is not just to satisfy my own palate, it's to give it to other people so they can carry out their artistry on it as well, on what I've made. So I'll be flinging out some EPs. I got Nowhere, as you know, because you did the cover for that Nowhere EP. I got Anywhere EP as well, and I got some other ones as well. And I think after those, that might just be me, you know? That might just be me.
can I interject?
Please.
It's not my place to say, I say this with the utmost respect. Going back to what you were saying about rapping and you feel like you've passed your prime, I don't know if that's necessarily true, and I think you're doing yourself a disservice. I think class is permanent, form is temporary. And I think that in the same way Snoop sounded so incredible on the Compton album, sometimes you might need to get with the people that can raise that same energy in the same way American Gangster brought out Jay-Z in a different light after Kingdom Come. Sometimes you just need a little jolt, and that could be that same energy that you had back in Terra Firma with NWC, that something that can help you bring it out, because it's still there. It doesn't leave you because it's right? It hasn't left you since you were, well, you said 17, 18. So it could be, and I could be completely wrong. I think it could be that you need to maybe, it might be a collective group of us that need to form like Voltron in order to get the best to go, this is where you go, right? So if you think about, you go to your sensei about productions and that, and I'm sure you have senseis on, well, not many people can tell you how to rap, right? Because you are the god MC in that sense. But I think it might be down to that. And I think once you've found that energy to unlock, because you've still got that blackout moment. I really stupidly, there's a show called Chuck. This guy gets I've watched Chaka for some reason. It's one of these guilty pleasures I have, right? But in the show, he becomes a CRA operative where they program him with all these different things that he can just turn it on like that. And he can kick the shit out of 10,000 people or, you know, fix a car in a matter of seconds, and it's a blackout mode. So I liken it to that. That doesn't leave you. I think it's just about surrounding yourself with the people that can get the best out of you in that moment, because you have so much longevity, because you've achieved so much, because you've left such an imprint. There's like, it's Messi Ronaldo levels. Where do you go? For them, it's like, all right, they've got personal goals. Yeah. But there's still something in Messi. There's still something Ronaldo. They've got to go to the right team. They've got to have the right team around them to bring out the best of them, right? So if you're a football fan, Ronaldo scored already 20 goals already this season, but he's having a failure of the season. No, just the team around it that need to pull it up. So I just wanted to say that respectfully, because I can't tell you how you feel, but I feel as a fan, I feel like I think there's a gear or two left in you, bro.
Fair dues, man. Respect for putting that across. I agree, to be honest. You know, it might be a case where I'm not realizing that I still have more work to do. You know, not also ultimately to provide artistry and pleasure to my listeners and my fans, but also to prove to myself that I can still do it, and I've still got a lot more to give. You know, as an MC, as an artist. So yeah, I'll definitely take that on board and you know, can consider what path I can travel, you know, in terms of
genuinely, because there's a bit of passion when you've been doing something for so long. It's just, I always look at it in sports terms. It's just how I am. After a while, you've hit so many heights, you need a new challenge. And so what we need to provide is an environment to make you feel like it's a new challenge. Then you'll rise above it. Because everything you've said throughout this whole interview is about a challenge that you've met. And that, hey, this person, and it was in this environment, and I drew from all these inspirations. It's a challenge. And we got to provide the challenge that unlocks that chamber.
Yeah, do you know what? I 100% agree, man. And it's interesting you saying about unlocking the challenge. My most recent and probably most poignant challenge that I've unlocked is being a father. You know, I talk a lot about that in my music.
Wow.
What I would aspire to pass down knowledge and behavioral patterns and certain things to my progeny. And I'm doing that. It's crazy. I don't have to talk about it anymore. I'm doing it. I'm a dad. I'm a father. You know, like, so again, I could see it as raw. I've made it. Or I could see it just like you're saying, nah, bro, you still may have a little bit more work to do. Fatherhood don't just stop when the child's born and yeah, I'm a dad. It's an evolution. So again, I apply the same ethos and ideology as being a father to my music. Yeah, 100% agree, man.
Yeah. And look at it this way. Kendrick Lamar hasn't put an album out because he's making music, but he's also being a father. You know what I'm saying? He's putting that time.
Yeah.
He's got kids.
Forget that. Yeah, people forget that he's had a child in the last 2-3 years.
Yeah.
So
I didn't know.
You got to live that, because through that experience, there is a new passion and drive that comes out of it. And maybe it's that helps to unlock it. But right now, you got to live your life, be a father, continue your music. It's going to be within you. It's in your veins. But man, you really have got a couple of levels. You have. It doesn't go, bro. It doesn't go because.
I've witnessed them, bro. I've witnessed them.
It's no different to Snoop, Jay, Kendrick, all the great. It's no different. And I purposefully say those names. It's no different. It really isn't. It's important that we have that leadership, that experience missing.
Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah. Bro, I mean, look, we haven't got anything else left to ask you, but just want to say, like, We're big on public praise, and I want to tell you, you are one of the elite MCs in this country. You're one of the greatest. You should have a statue in Ladbrokes Grove.
Bro, I can't.
Right by Dub Vendor, yeah? You need your own statue. And when I started working with you, I know we had mutual friends and we were collaborators at the time, but you've grown to become a friend and family to both me and Roxy. So thank you for your music. But mostly, most of all, thank you for being you. And it's an absolute pleasure to have
likewise,
you.
Likewise, man. I could honestly say that, you know, like when I use that word brother, I don't use that lightly. I can honestly call you a brother and a friend, you know, inside and outside of music. Like, so again, likewise, man. Ditto. Thank you. I'm honored. Super humbled, you know, by yourself.
Appreciate
and Summit
you.
As well. Thank you for having me. Super humbled, man. On all days.
Appreciate it, bro.
No doubt. Kaiser Smirnoff, God level pen game. Make sure your bars are high before you send them a demo.
Thank you, bro.
Thanks for your time,
no
bro.
No doubt, man. Thanks for having me. Thank you. Thank you.
Big thanks to Kaiser once again. Man, like, I listen, thinking about that episode, thinking back and listening to it. I hear a lot about the challenge. The thing that's sticking into my mind is the challenge. We'll talk about the God Flow in a second because that still amazes me. But the challenge and thinking about someone in his position and what he's achieved, it's very difficult to find yourself to, you know, different challenges. It's very difficult because who's there at that level still doing it? You know? It's hard. Yeah. A lot of people aren't doing it in that way, or they've put they've hung up their boots, as it were.
Yeah,
but he's still active.
For me,
still,
it's like Bret Hart, bro. It's like, you know, there was a time in the 90s Bret Hart got to the point where he'd won every title, every type of match he'd won it. He needed to find his Steve Austin. He needed someone who could rejuvenate and reinvigorate his career, and someone who he could pass on his knowledge and expertise to and make a star. So if Kaiser is Bret Hart, he just needs to find his Steve Austin right now.
Yeah, I agree. And man, you know, listen to Kaiser's music and you'll see the variety and diversity of his flow. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. I just don't know how he does it. I mean, I'm still amazed at how he described it as a kind of blackout moment, you know.
Bro, I was in the studio with him. I saw it. I saw it, bro. People don't understand having to write a song knowing that Skyzoo and Kaiser is on the song and I'm in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in the middle, bro.
Yeah. Different. He's different class.
I'm thankful for the experience though. It was one of the best experiences of my life, and to get props from Kaiser T1, and they said, "Look, man, yeah. Rap like that." Because I basically emulated him on the song. Like, I tried different flows, left breaths, pauses, intonation, you know, my voice. I changed it in certain places. Like, it's, bro, I went from quoting Bible scriptures to referencing Migos in one verse.
Wow.
So I went to all these different chambers. And, you know, it's he was the inspiration for that. So
it's like Ghostface. You'll hear the song soon. When he was talking about it, it was like, when he was talking about just going everywhere, or like not free writing, but he was just letting his mind go where it's like a bit like Ghostface. Ghostface will take you different places.
That comes from rich life experience.
Yes. No, it does. It does. It does.
You can't force that.
No, you can't force that. And if you try it, the listener will hear it. It won't seem as sincere. You'll hear it. It won't feel the same. But his history and what he was able to do, and hearing how he came into the game, how he had to almost quote unquote cut his teeth, man, that's it's hard, man, but it prepares you for so much going forward. So now his process is more refined. He had to go through that. Well, we talk about that. He talked about the 10,000 hours, but that's a process that he would do pretty much every day to sharpen his craft. And you bear the fruit of that when you as you get older, because the process just clicks in. It's just, it's like muscle memory. That's why I was saying that I think that for him, he's got still a couple of gears. It'll be muscle memory for him. He just needs to maybe get on the bike, maybe ride with some people, and feel like it's a challenge. It's the idea of making it feel like a challenge to him that will break him out of that. But I'm excited for him, man. It's good.
Yeah, me
to...
too. And my advice to everyone out there, if you think you're an MC, jump on the track with him.
Yeah. You'll
find out.
They'll be scared to. But it's good to hear he's still got projects coming out, a wealth of them, and he's challenging himself on the production side. So it's really exciting. And like I said to him, leadership, man. You know, we need that in this part because, I don't think many people want to jump on the track with him. They'll be too scared.
No, I wouldn't advise it. It's stress. It's a beautiful experience, but it's stress.
It is indeed. But no, thank you once again. I'm glad we had Kaiser on the podcast, man. It's a legend, man. We salute him and we thank him for his time. I'm not going to give up the socials because this is my new thing to say.
Now, you know what? Yeah, you have to give it out once in a while. If you don't want to do it today, that's fine. Because as you always say, what do you say?
I say, you know, you can if you need to find us, innit? Google,
and what
innit?
Else do you say?
Do your Googles.
What else do you say?
Fuck the socials.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the other thing. Sorry, Nat. You teed me up and that got delayed. But no, appreciate you guys, listeners across the world. Keep tapped in. We've got more interviews on the way. We appreciate each and every one of you. Next week, we'll be back with another episode. But until then, peace.
Peace.